broadcasting from the UNMC College of Nursing. Get ready for RN Huddle, the podcast dedicated to bringing hot topics for and by nurses to the table.
Well, welcome to another podcast. This time, we have a very special guest with us today who's going to be talking about some of the work that she did from the University of Chicago. But as you know, I usually start these podcasts with what's in my mailbox. So here's an interesting and probably fairly common question that I've answered a number of times. So the question is, how long do you have to make a determination that a pressure injury was present on admission? So this is really relevant to a multiple number of settings. As you know, in acute care, we are only paid for pressure injuries that were present on admission, but the standard of care is really driven from that. So here's the answer. Back in 2007, CMS, of course, passed the rules and the financial change that hospitals would not be paid for pressure injuries that developed during hospitalization, or what we call a HAPI today. But if it was present on admission, the hospital had really nothing to do with it. The difficulty is the deep tissue pressure injury, because there's a lag in time from when the pressure injury started to when the tissue turned purple that you could see it. So CMS lifted that requirement that you need to have this done within 4 hours, 8 hours, 24 hours, because DTI is not visible. So what does that mean for us as clinicians? It means that you need to do a skin assessment when the patient is a patient of yours. So once they're admitted to the hospital, if the ER has long stays, the skin assessment should start in the ER, but then repeat it for the next 24 to 48 hours. If that deep tissue injury appears during that first 48 hours, it's present on admission, particularly if the patient's history would support that. So that's the mailbox for this session. Lots of good stuff comes into my mailbox, so it's kind of fun to share it with you. So now let me introduce my guest to you. This is Dr. Susan Salmos. Dr. Susan Salmos is a wound specialist in Chicago at the University of Chicago. Susan, please introduce yourself to the listeners.
Sure, thank you. I graduated from the University of Nebraska Medical Center College of Nursing with my PhD in August of 2023. And during that time, I was working at the University of Chicago throughout my PhD program. I'm the former manager of nursing clinical services at University of Chicago.
We were extremely pleased that we had a student with us at the University of Nebraska. Janet Cunningham was actually the chair of Susan's work. But what was fascinating is actually our first topic today. Susan studied the impact of the face masks worn by nurses during the COVID epidemic. And I really want her to be able to tell the story. So I don't intend to do a lot of the talking except to shoot her a couple of what we call softball questions. I'm going to let her do the talking. So Susan, your dissertation had several pieces. One of the pieces was to look at facial injury from N95 masks from other masks. How did you come to want to study that? What was that moment in time for you where you probably saw your colleagues with facial injury and you said, I got to get to the bottom of this? So what was it that got you started down that path?
It started, as you mentioned, with my colleagues at the University of Chicago Medical Center with reports that they were developing injuries, pressure injuries from the masks while caring for patients in the early surges of the COVID pandemic, which was March 2020 is when the big surge was in Chicago. You know, looking then for what do we do? What is the literature? Is there anything out there? We hadn't seen this before. And I know that this seems, you know, routine now, but at the time it was really staggering. And finding images online of nurses in Italy that were posting selfies of these just really severe looking facial injuries really, I think, captured me emotionally and connecting that with my colleagues, you know, not just at University of Chicago, but as nurses, we have colleagues across the US, and really feeling for where they were at. And part of that concern also stemmed from reading what the nurses were describing as their experiences as they were posting these selfies, which were certainly enough to capture your attention. Reading what they were going through really took it kind of to that next level and really made me want to dig into this and make sure that the story got told.
I'm really hopeful that those of you that are listening to this podcast have an opportunity to see and hear Susan actually present this material. Sadly, today, this is audio. So what she's going to be able to do is describe for you what she saw in these selfies that were posted. It was difficult emotionally for me to work with Susan in the beginning of her study. It was difficult to hear her presented a couple of weeks ago because the images are, they're horrifying, Susan. They're horrifying. And I want you to describe for people what were you seeing? Because some of the people who are listening also wore N95 masks, also saw their own facial injuries. So as they're listening to you now, they're going, oh, gosh, I wonder if that's what I had was a pressure injury from an N95 mask. So why don't you tell the audience what you saw in these pictures?
I think we saw varying degrees of injuries, and the N95 were part of it. So across the bridge of the nose, across the cheeks, if you can imagine somebody, you know, fearing for their life during the pandemic and squeezing the nose bridge really tightly on the N95, trying to make sure that they had a good seal, and then being in the same mask for hours on end, we saw very visible, deep injuries there. Some of them were indentations, some of them were open lesions. And then you also had the goggles, the helmets, the other PPE that was protecting the eye that was putting even more pressure. And we saw certainly sores from those as well. And then one of the things that, in addition to seeing those visible injuries, you also saw both the exhaustion, dark shadows underneath people's eyes. You saw just the visible signs of not being able to take the mask off to take a break. So you saw very dry, chapped, cracked, bleeding lips, and they just looked utterly, staggeringly exhausted. And the impact, as I'm describing it, I can just see these faces that were part of the study and that were so brave to also share their stories.
Yeah, so Susan's study was very inventive because what she found were people from around the world that were posting their face on Instagram, and then a bit of unwinding, I think, not really complaining, but expressing the emotional grief from the work that they were doing combined with the physical injury. So I saw the same photos. The faces were bruised. As she said, there were open wounds, especially across the top of the nose and up near the eyes, and then also injury from the other devices. You know, in contrast, you know, when I think about caring for somebody with tuberculosis, we wore an N95 mask for that. And we compressed all of our nursing care into 15 or 20 minutes, went in with the mask, came out, took the mask off. And the rest of the day we spent without the mask on, you know, because we were caring for other patients. But what you're telling us is all too true, that you couldn't come out of that mask. You wore it all day long. And so not only was the pressure intense, because like you said, they were squeezing the nose piece, it was prolonged. So leading to significant injury. Did you find the study that you did emotionally hard to do? I mean, there had to have been a time where you just went, I can't do this anymore. This is hard.
It was, and it still is. Presenting it even a couple weeks ago, just emotionally, it's challenging. I think part of the qualitative piece of that, so describing the experiences, was that I captured these posts on Instagram throughout the pandemic. So I would check twice a day and save these posts in real time as they were coming through. And you could watch the situation map, whether it was Johns Hopkins or the World Health Organization, and see where COVID surges were hitting and see the number of posts and selfies that were coming in through those areas. And pairing the descriptions, the fear, the anxiety, everything that they were sharing, and most of them were posted not where you could see patients, but it was obvious that they were posting during a break time or, you know, in a supply room. It was very raw and it was very in the moment. And, you know, I do think that it was a way for them to both share their experiences as well as probably hopefully process some of what they were going through emotionally.
So I'm sure that most of our listeners are familiar with research in which there are statistical analyses of data, you know, the difference between the control group and the treatment group. You had to analyze that data, the data of what they were describing differently. You couldn't put a number to it. Tell the audience how you actually looked at their descriptions and their emotions and tried to classify it so that you could describe it.
Well, you start with the research question, and then for qualitative, you know, we were interested in looking at what were the personal, environmental, and contextual factors. So you have a code book, and that code book captures things from the personal perspective, like pain, anxiety, fear. Environmental could be the hours, the sweating, the pain associated with PPE use. So once you come up with your code book, then those Instagram posts were translated within Instagram because many of them weren't in English. And you use a qualitative coding program then to go through and match what you're seeing within the quotes to the relevant codes from your code book. And doing that for each and every single one of the posts. And some of the posts were, even though they're short, they're very intense in the amount of information that was in them. So there could be codes that were double coded, for example, and you keep moving through that process and you work with your team to discuss any challenges that you have or any decisions that you make, and you keep a detailed log of that. Simultaneously, we're also doing a means of member checking to make sure that what we were seeing in the qualitative posts were also being voiced by healthcare professionals. So verifying that they were in a healthcare setting, looking at their gaze towards the camera, what their profile was. You know, there's rigor to qualitative research. It's just different than the rigor that we think of with quantitative research. Now, once all of that is done and you've gone through all of these posts, which took weeks, and again, we had weekly meetings with qualitative expert on my supervisory committee, Dr. Christine Eisenhower, and then my advisor, Janet Cuttigan, and we would sit down and go through all of these. And then once you have all of those coded, you need to bring those into themes.
What were the themes? We don't need the entire list, but I think the audience could probably guess what most of them are. But what were the big ones?
I think pervasive fear was one of the big ones that came through. And it wasn't just for the nurse or the healthcare worker that was posting. It was for their family members. It was for their colleagues, which also led to a theme that we weren't expecting, and that was the collective voice. So they would often start out talking about themselves from the I perspective. This is what I feel. And it would shift towards advocating for their patients, advocating for their families, advocating for their colleagues. And it went from I to we quite often within the post. So collective voice was another theme that was identified. And then the scars that we see, those facial injuries that we saw, were just the tip of the iceberg for what became a theme that was both the physical and emotional scars. And I think that was one of the things that we expected people to talk about their experience. We expected them to talk about the pain and to be centered on the PPE and the injuries from the PPEs. What they talked about in much more depth was the emotional scars and how challenging and how difficult it was day in and day out to go into that type of environment with the fear, with the not knowing, and the sheer volume of deaths that were seen during the COVID pandemic as well.
The presentation that you did a couple of weeks ago at the National Pressure Injury Advisory Panel was moving. A number of people approached you after the presentation just to share the common experience of work exhaustion, fear of communicating or having the disease communicated to them, because you needed the mask to be tight because it was an airborne disease, but it was so tight it was injuring the provider. So a very unique story. And sadly, you know, we weren't able to find a mask that didn't cause pressure on the face at the same time, kept the person safe. So what happened to the nurses that you worked with personally? Because I know that in these Instagram posts, you didn't know all of these people. As you said, they came from around the world. But what happened to the nurses that you worked with at the University of Chicago? The pandemic is behind us now, but what happened to their emotional health and their physical health?
I think that's a really good question. And the answer is, I'm not sure. I think that as nurses and as healthcare workers, the pandemic at some point stopped with that sense of urgency and the surge, and the patients just kept on coming. And they were the patients that were seen before COVID, and, you know, surgeries picked back up and the world like kind of moved on and everything just kept rolling forward. So I think that coming out of the pandemic, whether it's nurses that I've worked with or certainly the nurses that posted their experiences on Instagram, there is a need to revisit the experiences that they voiced and really connect with how do we make sure that we heal from this experience as a nursing profession. And I think that's really key for retention for all of us. You know, even though my role wasn't at the bedside during the pandemic, there's certainly stuff that I'm holding on to, right? About reading these experiences and all the what ifs that you go through, right? And I can't even imagine what it was like for those that were immersed in this day in and day out. And I think that we're seeing those struggles play out, not just in the US with nursing shortages, but really around the globe as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's still grieving to be done. And I think we collectively need to acknowledge the bravery of the nurses that went to work that sustained personal injury to their face. And then what you just said a few seconds ago is the hardest part for me, is now that the COVID pandemic is over, and this I'm talking about like 18 months ago, okay, let's get those surgeries going again. Look, come on, let's move along. As if you could just shut the door on what happened to you and move forward. And I agree with you completely, Susan. There is still a burden that some of those nurses are carrying, particularly emotionally, that we need to appreciate, move through, not move on, but move through. Because the World Health Organization, as you're well aware of, is planning for the next one. And I hope to heck they have better masks and better stuff for us to use, because it was unbearable, some of the things that had to be worn. Yeah. What messages would you leave the audience with today if they're working with nurses who went through the COVID pandemic and were emotionally or physically injured?
I think as colleagues, as friends, as researchers, asking what they need. So I can do the research and I can read the experiences and I can pull together themes based on the questions that I had. I think there are still questions that need to be answered about those experiences. And I think that those voices of the people that went through this experience perhaps are best suited to tell us what they need in order to heal, in order to move forward from what was, I think, the most challenging thing any of us have ever seen in our nursing careers. And I've been a nurse for quite a while, and I've had really tough shifts before. I haven't had anything that would ever even remotely compare to the descriptions of nurses that talked about working 30 days in a row, some of them wearing the same mask for 30 days straight, taking care of patients with just a disease that nobody knew anything about amongst all the shortages and shutdowns. So be there for your colleagues, be there for your friends, and ask them what they need in order to heal and to move forward.
I don't believe I could end this session any better. You have been listening to Susan Salmos from the University of Chicago describe some research that she did in order to get a PhD, where she looked at the nurses posting on Instagram of facial injuries associated with N95 masks. Horrid period of time. Susan, thank you so much for sharing your experience and your study. I think you're absolutely right. We're not through yet. We haven't fixed all the problems. So I thank you for spending time with the podcast with us. And I thank Courtney Smith for being the mastermind behind the controls that actually makes this appear so that you can listen to it. Thank you, Courtney. I'm signing off. This is Joyce Black from the University of Nebraska Medical Center and also with the National Pressure Injury Advisory Panel. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to RN Huddle. To stay connected, follow us on Twitter and Facebook at UNMCCNE or check out unmc.edu/CNE for more program information.